I'm Michael Max, and this is Cheological. This is one of a number of special podcasts from the Shennong Society's day-long conference on Chinese herbal medicine. This podcast comes to you with support from Meiwei Herbs. Meiwei supports the continuing education and learning of practitioners and is delighted to help bring you these podcasts that explore our herbal traditions and modern use of herbs in the modern clinic. I'm back with our next speaker from the Shennong Conference. It's Craig Mitchell. Y'all probably know a lot about his work. In fact, he was one of the translators of the Walk Along the River. And today he was here at the conference speaking about Sinisan and why is it in the Shaoyin section of the Shanghan Lit. That's actually not the subject of this conversation. But just to let you know that there's some interesting conversations out there about this, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk with him at another time about that. But the main reason I've got Craig here is because he's had the opportunity to work with Dr. Yu. He's had an opportunity to work with the work that Dr. Yu is doing. And I know from my experience that whenever I've had a chance to hang out with a doc for a while, that doctor's work has sort of rubbed off on me a bit. And so I'm sitting down here with Craig, curious to know what kind of influences Dr. Yu's work might have had on him. Craig, welcome to Cheological.
Thanks for having me, Michael. It's nice to be here. So the question that you're asking is complicated, and it has a very long answer.
We've got a little bit of time.
I'm going to let you hold this.
Okay. So I think that I could answer this on a few different levels. So one example or one level is just simply that Dr. Yu has, through working on his material, I have learned about formulas with which I was previously unfamiliar. So an example of that is in the first volume of the book, there's a formula called Chai Chun Zi Xie Tang. And that formula is a combination of Xiao Chai Hu Tang, Erchen Tang, and Zhe Xie Tang. And it's used, Dr. Yu and his teacher, Zhang Ershun, use that formula for vertigo. And I read about that and looked at it, and I think it's actually a really interesting discussion in the book about where vertigo comes from and what are all the factors from a Chinese medicine point of view. And I've used the formula now on, I don't know, it's probably a half a dozen patients, and it has been an amazingly effective formula.
For vertigo?
For vertigo, yes, exactly. I've used it for that usage specifically because that's what I learned about it from Dr. Yu for, right? And so that there are a few formulas in his work that are either, you know, that's a non-standard way of bringing a bunch of formulas together for a specific purpose, to achieve a specific therapeutic goal. And so having access to those kinds of things, then you get a patient and you're like, oh, there's this formula from Dr. Yu's book, and I think I might be able to use that. And that's just one example of that.
Yeah. Could you unpack that formula just a little bit? I know that when people come in with vertigo, I'll often see some sort of a Shaoyang presentation, right? And Xiao Chai Hu Tang or Sinisan are often things that come to mind and, you know, modified in different ways. Yeah. So could you unpack that a little bit for us and how those three formulas work together to treat vertigo?
Aren't I supposed to say, just read my book?
Well, of course, that's a great idea. In fact, y'all got the book already, right?
So, I mean, without going into too much detail, it is, obviously, we have the Xiao Chai Hu Tang part to address the Shaoyang aspect of that problem. And I think one of the conceptions of the Shaoyang, that kind of Shaoyang problem, is that it creates heat that rises in the body. And so when that heat rises, that can be one of the factors that gives rise to vertigo. Of course, in most of the patients who have these kinds of problems, they also have a problem with fluid dynamics, and they have phlegm that's hanging around, or damp or some combination of those things. So the Erchen Tang addresses that. The other aspect of the of that formulation is that usually there's an underlying problem with this, either a spleen and or a kidney deficiency as a root problem. And so the one of the things that Dr. Yu talks about in the text is that you can't really tonify the kidney at that point in time because the kinds of things that you might want to use are usually not applicable when somebody has dampness to that degree where it's causing vertigo. So you start by working on the spleen, right, where you're using those kinds of warm, slightly drying substances like in Erchen Tang that can help to enliven the spleen and transform dampness and strengthen the spleen qi. So it's this, I think it's a great example of, like, when you look in the classical literature, you'll find these idiomatic quotes about vertigo where it'll say, there is no vertigo without phlegm, or there is no vertigo without without fire. And then what Dr. Yu says is, well, in fact, those are all part of the equation, and you actually need to address them all at the same time. And by addressing them all at the same time, that's why the formula works so quickly and so rapidly for a wide range of patients, because to some degree, all of those pathologies will be involved. And he's quick to make a distinction between sort of like, oh, I'm a little woozy or I'm a little lightheaded versus vertigo, like where the room is actually spinning. And so some of the key distinguishing things are that sense of movement in the head, mm-hmm. and then usually a thick, slightly greasy tongue coat. But I've used the formula now with enough different patients that I'm like, the formula just seems really great regardless of a bunch of other things, right? So you can kind of almost ignore those other aspects and use the formula to address that acute branch problem. And then you may need to go back and do other things, right, afterwards.
Well, it sounds like in some ways you've got a dynamic here where you've got some heat going off from the Xiaoyang, but you've got this fluid issue. They're kind of glued together. Mm-hmm. If you work on one without the other, you know, it's like, how do you unwind? You need to unwind them both at the same time. And in your talk today, you said something to the effect of, really for learning almost any formula. I mean, the classics, of course, we hear this, oh, learn those simple four herb formulas, because then you'll learn the dynamics and you'll see how these things work. Use the Jingfang and the classical formulas, you know, unmodified until you understand them. You suggested that really for any formula that's been around for a bit of time, use it without too much modification, because then you'll get a sense of what the doctor was seeing. You'll get a sense of what the doctor was pointing at, you know, in his own thinking. And so I hear you using this with Dr. Yu's formula, just take it, use it, watch what happens.
Right. That's absolutely right. And I think the other thing that it points to, I've spoken to Dr. Yu at some length about this, and so we all, as modern students of East Asian medicine, we all think about pattern differentiation, right? What in Chinese is bian zheng. And Dr. Yu is very quick to point out that while bian zheng is very, very important, it's very useful, and it is something that we should study, but there is a long history and a long tradition in East Asian medicine of bian bing. So bian bing is disease differentiation. And I'm not talking about, you know, modern biochemical, modern biomedical disease names. I'm talking about the traditional disease names. And so this is something else that has rubbed off on me. There are certain things where, you know, regardless of the rest of the signs and symptoms, if you see these kind of certain cardinal symptoms in a certain kind of disease pattern, you use this formula. You don't have to do bian zheng on it. Right? It's a bian bing. It's a disease differentiation. Once they have the disease, if they have this set of symptoms that are associated with that, then you use that formula. Right?
Now, that's interesting, because so often, I'm just trying to think here. I'm thinking in my studies and often in my thinking, I'm trying to think not so much about illness. I'm trying to think about, like, what's the pattern?
Right.
And what you're saying here is there's also a way that illness can show up. And when it shows up in a certain way, then you just treat that and then see if there's anything left over.
Yes.
I have that right?
Yes. So again, in the first Walk Along the River book, there's a case of a guy who has headache and he's vomiting up clear fluids, right? And so the thing that's interesting about that case is that he, you know, when you hear headache, vomiting of clear fluids, you think wujuyutang. But the patient has a bunch of heat signs, right? And so you're like, well, that's a problem, right? I don't want to use wujuyutang because from a bianzheng point of view, from a pattern differentiation point of view, that doesn't seem right. That's cold congestion, supposed to be the pathodynamic. That's the wrong pathodynamic if there's heat, right? And Dr. Yu says, no, actually. You use that formula because those symptoms are so closely tied to wujuyutang, it doesn't matter what else is there.
Okay, this brings up a very thorny question that I suspect all y'all out there listening to this have experienced with this as well, that there are certain symptoms, you need to pay attention to them. There are other symptoms, sometimes you can actually safely ignore. The question is, when do I know to ignore what, and when do I need to know what to pay attention to? Something else that you mentioned in your talk today was that if you take away what a person's main complaint is, if you just erase that from your thinking and look at what's going on for them, you'll get a different picture. So I know this is an impossible question to answer, but you're a good guy to ask impossible questions too. So how do you know when something is worth paying attention to and when you can safely ignore it? And if you decide you're going to ignore it, how do you make sure you don't forget? How do you sort of navigate this, when to pay attention to something and when to put it on the back burner?
So Dr. Yu started seeing patients when I was 2. Right? So I mean, I think we have to also remember that the amount of clinical experience that he has is so vast that he can say things with authority that I would never be comfortable saying, right? He was kind of joking with us during the class saying that last year he didn't see that many patients, and we asked him how many patients he saw, and he said about 8,000. So that's the preface to my answer, right? How do you know when to say, oh, I'm going to ignore those symptoms and that's okay to ignore them? If I'm honest, you only know in retrospect. So like in the wujuyutang case, what Dr. Yu ends up doing is giving the patient wujuyutang unmodified. And he says, look, you may feel thirsty, you may get a dry mouth, you may have these problems, but I want you to kind of continue on this for a week and then we will decide what we need to do next. And patient takes the herbs and, of course, gets better. And so then you know, well, it was okay to ignore the rest of those heat signs in that case. And then Dr. Yu tries to go back and unravel, why did that patient have those heat signs? Mm-hmm. And where did they come from? And how does he now understand that? Because he knows now that the internal pathodynamic was, in fact, trapped cold. Because he used that formula and it worked, right? But I would not generally be comfortable telling you that in advance.
Right. Sometimes it's the post-game conversation that helps us to understand something. Oh, there's some heat. Well, there was some trapped cold that could cause some constraint that'll give you some heat. I mean, it's a very common Taiyang kind of an issue when you think about it. And it reminds me, too, and I've heard so many really good herbalists talk about this, that you give a formula as a testing formula. You've got an idea. You're very clear. You're not going to try to create some harmonizing thing or take care of everything. You're looking at the one thing you think it is, and you go at it directly, and then you watch and see what happens.
Yeah, and I think there's a fine balance that we we hopefully try to achieve, which is, you know, I don't want to feel like I'm testing formulas on my patients. So I want to make sure that I'm clear about what I'm giving, and that, I mean, one of the reasons for me to use whatever formula I'm using in a fairly unmodified way at the beginning is because it allows me to be more clear about what my therapeutic goal is. And so that I think is an important factor.
Yeah, I didn't mean to suggest testing like I'm not sure I'm going to throw this at them. It's I've got a clear idea in mind that I'm diagnosing, and I want to see how that they react to it. There was something else that you brought up, which is once that issue cleared, then Dr. Yu will go back, you know, and look at that case and go, okay, these other things that didn't quite match up, how does it fit? This seems like a really helpful piece. I'm not sure how many of us do that. You know, do we go back and try to figure out why were these other things here? Or do we just go, okay, that worked and on to the next thing? So, you know, doing like a post-mortem and like case study of things that work might not be a bad idea.
I think that it's a great idea. I know that most of us were busy, and the idea of going back and doing that is not easy. I do think it points to the value of actually writing up cases. Because when you actually have to write something down, and especially if you think you're going to publish it or let other people look at it, then you have to go through the process of trying to understand what it was that you were thinking. And one of the great things that Dr. Yu did for us in Seattle last weekend, which I guess he's doing again up in at White Pine, is talking about cases where the initial diagnosis and treatment didn't go well. And then how do you adjust and change? And I think, you know, for me, one of the things that hanging around with Dr. Yu has reminded me about, because I've known this before, but he reminds me because of his amazing breadth of knowledge and depth of clinical experience, is, you know, Dr. Yu doesn't always get it right the first time. You know, he's not infallible. None of us are. But he is very clear in his thinking. And so when he gives a patient a formula and he doesn't get the outcome that he wants, he already has a plan about what to do next. And I think that if we have any responsibility to our patients around sort of trying a formula and we're not sure it's going to work, it's this, that we want to be clear, have a real focused directionality in what we're doing, and maybe we already have thought a little bit about, well, if I give this formula and it's not quite right, what might I expect to see? What kinds of problems might occur? And then you can start to kind of imagine, well, if that happens, then maybe I can go in this other direction.
That's a really good idea. And I know we're all really busy in clinic, but taking that little bit of extra time, and this comes back to I think I'm answering a question that I asked you. I'm answering it for myself, so thank you. That was very tricky there, Dr. Mitchell, of how do you know what to pay attention to and what not to. But when I'm making a formula, come up with a diagnosis, make a formula, there's a few things that don't fit. Be sure to write those down. These are the things that I am not sure of. And this formula may cause this exacerbation of those. And if that happens, what would my plan B be? Thinking about that ahead of time, I haven't done that, but I like the idea of starting to do it. What does it do? It makes me think it through much more clearly. Instead of like, here's a formula, let's see what happens, think it through first and then see what happens. Do you guys do that in your school when you teach people?
Well, I was going to say that this is something that I have to do more than the average person, because I have students often that are following me, and they're saying, why did you give the patient that formula? And what do you think is going to happen? Mm-hmm. And so like many things, it's that situation of having to explain myself to somebody with less experience than I have it forces me to go back and go, okay, am I really clear about this? Do I really have a conception of what could potentially be problematic about what I'm giving? And then what do I think is going to happen and what would I do if it does? And also, when you've chosen the formula that you think is the starting place, can you conceptualize how that formula, like you mentioned, there's maybe a couple of symptoms that you haven't quite come to terms with. I think it's a really good idea to think about, can my formula address those symptoms? Because, you know, oftentimes what you'll find if you actually kind of push yourself to go there a little bit, you'll go, well, you know, I don't, like, can't, like, I'll give you an example since we were talking about Sinisan today. So Sinisan normally uses, in the classical formula, uses Jershir, right? So Jershir has a mild ability to promote bowel movement, right? So you have a patient who you want to use Sinisan with, but they have diarrhea. So do you use Jershir or not, right? Well, in my experience, if the patient has diarrhea, but they really are a true Sinisan patient, and they haven't had diarrhea for so long that they're deficient or those kinds of things, if they really fit that qi dynamic kind of problem, Jershir will solidify the stool, right? And in fact, changing it out for Jerke because they have diarrhea will not help them as much. So now you have to be careful with this, because if the patient has a little bit of an underlying spleen deficiency, sometimes you can exacerbate the diarrhea. And so knowing where that line is and when to use it and when not, that's something that I think you just get from experience. Mm-hmm. But it also illustrates this issue of, okay, can my formula address symptom X? And if I think the answer is, well, yes, it can, as long as it's a product of that disease dynamic, well, then that's a great thing for you when the patient comes back and says, yeah, like, I'm having these super beautiful regular bowel movements now. And you go, okay, right? Check. That's because that came from that Sinisan qi dynamic problem. It didn't come from something else, because I made it go away with Sinisan.
Yeah, this is one of the joys of doing our work, and this is one of the things that can also keep us up at night. Did I do the right thing? There's a book that I got when I was in Taiwan, and I should remember the name, but I don't. But it was this, it was a guy who did the Kampo book. I forget his name. Otsuka, that's right. And his case studies are great because he is so transparent. And he talks about this very thing, where he'll see a pattern, and he'll see some things, and it doesn't quite match, and do I do this, do I do that? Yeah. And he talks in this one case about, well, I finally decided, even though they had these blah, blah, blah symptoms, I gave him this other thing anyway, and then I didn't sleep that night because I wonder what I'd done to my patient. And like 2 days later, they come back, and it turns out that things were fine, and he says, well, here's what I learned. This formula also treats these things in this kind of a situation. But that honesty, that, oh my goodness, I'm not exactly sure, but I'm going out on a limb, not being irresponsible, not flippant, yeah, but just taking myself a bit beyond the edge of what I know and then paying attention to the results. And it seems the only way to learn this medicine, fortunately or not, is by taking these risks.
Well, they don't call it the practice of medicine, yeah, for nothing, right? I didn't make that up, of course, but
no. All right. Well, thank you for your time here today. It's always delightful to talk about this stuff, and maybe we'll get you back one day to talk about why Sinisan is in the Shaoyin portion of the Shanghan Lun. Thank you so much, Craig.
Thank you very much, Michael. It was nice to see you.